Accession number 14780, Reel 1.
Major Douglas, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
Bournemouth.
And in which year was that?
1911.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a tea planter in India.
Which part of India was that?
In Chotanagpur. Town was Ranchi, which was one of the hill stations.
Did you have your education in Bournemouth?
No, in Cheltenham.
Which school did you go to there?
The college.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you finished your education?
17.
So that was in 28?
Yeah.
Did you get a job?
I did. I went to the power company. First of all, I went from the college to Faraday House Electrical Engineering College.
How did you come to be in the army then?
Well, I think I was on the supplementary reserve of sappers. And in the 1936, I got a letter from the war office, to say, from AG7, saying, would I take a short service commission, 5 years to 7 years? To which I wrote back and said, agreed, because the job I had with the Shropshire Power Company, the pay was very poor and prospects were bad. So I proceeded to go accept the order, offer, and went to Chatham in April 1936.
Did you at that time think that a war was coming?
Yes.
But that didn't put you off going into the
Sabbath? No. Most of us on there knew that we'd have to go in anyhow, so might as well go in early.
What kind of training did you have as a sapper officer?
8 months at Chatham.
Were you satisfied with the quality of the training that you received?
Well, it wasn't as sufficient as the regulars, but it's sufficient. And I was the first to leave. I was the first second lieutenant sapper ever to leave England. Because being regulars, they're only full lieutenants normally. And I was the one pepper, and I went to Hong Kong. And I was the first one there, first second lieutenant.
What kind of duties did you have in Hong Kong?
Searchlights. We were working searchlights, coast defense, and the ordinary searchlights.
Were you in Hong Kong when the war broke out in September 39?
No, actually, what happened was, there's no leave in those days. And it wasn't very good. In fact, while I was there, ran the hockey and the gas and hockey in Hong Kong. And when I tried to get leave, they said, oh no, sorry, can't go. So I managed to talk the colonel, the G1 colonel, who was my chairman of the hockey, whether I could take the gas and hockey team down to Singapore. So he said, oh yes, that's right, Dougie, that's right. So I contacted Singapore and could I bring the team down, and the people down there said, oh, it's a pleasure. So then I went and saw the HMS Eagle, the aircraft carrier. I said, can you take us down to Singapore? So he said, oh, it's a pleasure. So then I went to other arrangements to make, and then I went and saw the colonel again. I said, well, we're leaving tomorrow, sir. He said, where to? I said, Singapore. I said, whose authority? I said, yours. I said, yours. Christmas, I thought you were joking. And so, anyhow, I said, heaven's sake, don't tell the press or to bring it here before you go. So I proceeded to tell the chaps to keep their mouths shut. And the following morning, we went down to the docks, and the naval launcher was there waiting for us. And took us on board, and we expected to be taken and off the boat any time. Anyhow, we sailed out of Hong Kong Harbour, and 5 days down to Singapore. And we had a very good trip down there. Played 6 matches, 1-2, lost 2, and drew 2. And then came back, and then we were stuck because then HMS... Munich blew up. And we had arranged to go back in Medway, which was the naval mine ship, Navy ship, and but they were suddenly told that they were to stay where they were. So I then had to rush around in Singapore and eventually got into one of the troop ships, which had arrived on its way to Hong Kong. And so we went back in this troop ship.
So you got back to Britain before war broke out?
Before war broke out. And then it wasn't much fun. So I saw there was a letter suddenly the Garrison News, I think it was, about a vacancy for people who wanted to go on a special course in London. And said no commanding officer could block any applications. So I sent off an application.
Did you know what kind of a special course it was?
No, it just said a special course.
Why apply for something when you didn't know what it involved?
Well, it meant getting home. I'd done my almost three years there, and I was just waiting to go home. So I put in for it, and about 2 months later, I'd forgotten all about this, I was on board one of the troop ships on its going home, and saying goodbye to a friend of a pal of mine. And I met the G1 colonel again, and I said, "Hello, Doug." He said, "I hear you off to UK shortly." I said, "Am I?" He said, "Yes, you're going on a special course." So I forgot all about this. Anyhow, Julie went off on the home liners, and there were six others. And we arrived in London, in Southampton Docks, in London Docks. I went on Wednesday, Easter Wednesday, and proceeded to have the weekend off, and then had to report down to Woolwich. And went there, and there were about 12 of us, I think. And we asked what it was, and it is a radar course. And in fact, it was known as G1 in those days, or was it G1 or GL? But anyhow, they had the first talk described to us by the instructor, and then they showed us the program for this course, and it shook me completely because it was all signal stuff, and I knew about electricity, but I didn't know anything at all about radios and that kind of stuff. So I saw the chief instructor, and I said, "I think I've come here on a false impression." I said, "The course is on this radio." And I said, "No, I put a plug in, but that's about all." So he said, "Well, do what you can." So I did. And anyhow, they sent the course next chart, gave us, marked us 1 if you got it right, and -1 if you got it wrong. And the questions were 40 questions in 40 minutes, I think it was. So I... Not these things didn't even mean anything to me at all. So the next day, when the instructor gave out the results, he said, "One of you got a -25. So I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Yes, I'm afraid it was." And so they said, "Well, we shan't send you back to England because you come back quite fairly." And so then, what do I do then? Oh, I went across to France, took some transport over to France, and proceeded to travel around northern France.
This is with the British Expeditionary.
Yeah, and eventually got connected with I got it on here anyway. In France, I joined John Lang's company on the Sappers, and proceeded to spend there some time mining bridges. But it wasn't much good, because every time we worked all night mining bridges, we then got instructions from somewhere, withdraw immediately and leave bridge intact. And we got a bit fed up having worked all night long. Then they had to depart to some remote place, and then start again.
So this was during the German advance through France and Belgium.
Yeah, that part, yes. And proceeded to... Anyhow, we eventually... we came back by Cherbourg. And then proceeded to then go with this company up to the Orkney Islands.
Excuse me. Whilst you were in France, did you come into close contact with German forces?
Nope, never saw one.
Why were the bridges left unblown if you were trying to hamper the Germans?
They were, yes. Could we have been sent there with the instructions to blow these bridges, and having drowned and worked all night, we're then told to withdraw and leave bridges intact, which I thought was a waste of time, personally.
Maybe because there were British troops still to cross?
Might have been, yes, but we were fairly well back. We were fairly well in different directions, I think. We were on the main outgoing road from Belgium for Paris.
Did you know the name and number of this company, apart from the fact that the commanding officer was John Lang?
John Lang was the name of the company, of the building company, you know, Lang and Company.
Oh, it was a civilian?
Civilian company. Well, what these people had been, all these big companies, at the start of the war, were sent down to Margate, put into uniform. I was down there at the time, and I drilled the officers, and other people took on the other ranks. And they were only for about 48 hours. And then they were all sent off to France to work on docks and bridges like that.
So it was civilians in uniform as part of the Royal
Engineers? Really, yes. One of the directors was made a major. The company's the sergeant major, or the foreman, were made sergeant majors, and so on. The company was about 300 strong. But there was Lang, one of those famous companies. Probably by my memory, but all well-known firms, building firms. Yeah.
But did they constitute part of the Royal Engineers?
Yes, they were a general construction company. General construction company of the sappers.
Was it easy for you to escape through Cherbourg?
Well, no, we came back through the night and later, and rather amusing in a way, we got into the outskirts of Cherbourg on the hill above about 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and we saw a drive leading to a big house in the distance, so we pulled in and drove our vehicles on the side of the drive, and then doctors came, and we proceeded to go to sleep under the vehicles. And dawn came at about 6, and we were waking up. I suddenly heard a very English voice saying, "Gentlemen, the Count and Countess will be pleased to give you breakfast." So we were hearing things. Anyhow, we got in the cars and drove down the docks, and the Countess, I can't remember what their names were, but she was English, but the Count, I'm afraid, couldn't speak any English. But they gave us a smashing breakfast, and a bath and a wash. And then we went back again and made our way to Cherbourg.
How many of you got this preferential treatment?
Most of them, I think, as I remember.
Was that a large number?
No, because you couldn't get them all into the bath. Ordinary house. There's a sort of chateau there. But I suppose about a dozen of us. I must say, we got a meal as well from there. But then I say we went down to the outskirts of
Cherbourg
for the night and just lay under the trees. And then at dawn, all got up and made our way down to the docks, drove down to the docks, and proceeded to go on board. Had to leave our vehicles behind. We had to leave all our explosives behind as well, which they used to blow up all the cranes. And on the docks, when we left, they were blown up by a chap on the destroyer outside the wall. We'd taken back about 7 tons of explosive for the company.
What kind of a ship did you embark in?
An ordinary cargo boat, about a 4,000-ton cargo boat. And we were all so tired that we just lay on the floor anywhere, in chairs anywhere, and all just fell asleep. It was very misty at the time when the ship pulled out of the docks making for Southampton. And we were thankful for this mist. We always wanted to see anything, but halfway across the channel, the mist cleared and became a beautiful sunny day. But still everybody was sound asleep. There was just the odd gun mounted on the deck, but no one to man it. Well, everybody for about 4 days. They hadn't slept at all properly. And as far as food was concerned, on that trip working to Shore Cherbourg, we eventually just had to take what food the locals gave us. When there were no rations, but as we drove through their villages, French villages, the villagers came out and gave us bottles of champagne and long French loaves, which all we had to eat. Which was sufficient to keep us going anyhow.
Did the Germans attack you in crossing the channel?
Nope, never saw them at all. No. I think the odd Spitfire was keeping them away.
What was done for you on arrival? Did you have the WVS?
We landed up at Southampton, put on a special train, which took us to Leeds. And the officers were put up in the Midland Hotel, and the other ranks were put up by the police and taken in lodgings around the town.
In Leeds?
In Leeds, yes.
Did you then have to go to another company or unit of the RE?
No, when the same lot, and was in over a week in Leeds, and then we're taken up to the Orkneys.
What were you supposed to be doing there?
There we were making building camps, and the ordnance depot which I was building. We were in Stromness, in the Orkneys.
What were conditions like up there in 1940?
Pretty damn cold, actually. It was about September then, and we were up there for 5-6 months. But I was living just in a bell tent, and the other men, my troops, we were building a camp there, proper camp, wooden, Nissen huts camp, and anyhow, they were my quartermaster was in a marquee with his assistant, and one night blew a howling gale, and I looked out of my tent in the morning. There was the quartermaster and assistant on their camp beds, sound asleep, and the marquee was up stuck in trees at the top of the field. And one of the fishing boats in Kirkwall was sunk in its mooring, so sure it must have been pretty rough. Anyhow, I was there doing that, building that, and then we built our own camp, and then we built this, we were told to build this ordnance depot in a field just outside Stromness. The locals all told me it was mad because it was just a bog, this field. It was a bog, complete bog. So I protested back, but I was ordered to do it. And we started and had to get hardcore, lorry loads of hardcore from little local lorries, and they drove onto this field and tipped the stuff down, and then the stuff just disappeared. I went on doing that over and over again. What a cost, I just dread to think. Anyhow, eventually we got enough to get, and then we had to build a wall to build the Irish Nissen, the big store Nissen, and got it in, and then put the hardcore down, and then had to roll it, and I put a roller in, and the roller disappeared. And then this time, I was then posted to Kirkwall to build a headquarter camp. And then I was suddenly posted to bomb disposal.
You were sent to bomb disposal?
Mm.
How did you feel about being ordered to go into bomb disposal?
Well, when I started, I was a bit rather put off, but anyhow, when I did go to bomb disposal and got into it, I enjoyed it because we had a we were always very independent in the units. No senior officer even dared come and give us rockets.
Where did you have your training for bomb disposal?
At the RAF station down at what's that place called? Down in.
You said it was somewhere near Bath.
Near Bath, there's an RAF station, and they did all the army as well, the bomb clearance.
What did the training involve?
Major taking out fuses, sharing the fuses, how to take them out, and it was a fortnight's course.
How were you supposed to take them out?
Well, in those days, all we had was a screwdriver and a ring which fitted onto the head of the fuse. That was all there was then. And
how did you know that the ring would fit?
Well, we knew because we had one or two of the fuses had dropped. I mean, I knew the sizes of these things. But because later on, of course, we had far more sophisticated equipment.
What was the function of the ring?
To pull the fuse out. It had a fuse ring. It had a ring keeping the fuse in position. You had to unscrew that, and then the fuse would lift out. But we heard, we never knew whether it was discovered, it was true or not, that when the war started, that all the powers that be thought that there would never be any bombs which penetrate the ground. They would just land on the surface. So no one had did any training for digging them up. We never knew whether it was true or not. But anyhow, having done that, I was then sent to Wrexham to take over the bomb disposal platoon in Wrexham. And that, again, rather shook me because my predecessor had gone to another posting. And when I went in Wrexham, our billet was at a doctor's house on the outskirts of Wrexham. Well, it wasn't too far outside, but the first day I went into the garage, there, to my astonishment and horror, this living subaltern, Peterson, all he'd been doing was collecting bombs and fuses and ACAC shells and storing them in the garage. And I estimate there was a ton of high explosive in the garage, which would have, quite a large part of Wrexham would have disappeared. Anyhow, I got up very promptly and got my lorry up, and we took it up onto the plateau above Wrexham and demolished it in the bomb cemetery, as we called it. There was a big crater up there, and put them in there and then put them up.
Who was this man who had done this?
The predecessor of the owner, not the owner, the subaltern. He, I don't know where he'd been posted, somewhere else, but I can't remember what his name was now.
No. How is it that he didn't know that it was dangerous? Just inexplicable.
Inexplicable, yes.
Was it disposed of safely?
Oh, yes, but again, that's all funny, anyway, because I took it up on this plateau, which is well above Wrexham, and about 7 or 8 miles from Wrexham as well, and pooped and exploded them, put all the shells and things in, and put a slap of gun against them and blew the lot up. Went off with a very satisfactory bang. And then we came back in, drove to our billet. There was a message from the colonel of the Welsh regiment in the barracks at Wrexham to go and see him immediately. So which I did. And he said, "You've been blowing up the bombs." And I said, "Yes, why?" He said, "You've blown all the windows out of that side of the barracks." So I said, "This is 7 miles away and well above the Wrexham." So his language was pretty blue. And anyhow, that's one of the things we can't help. had to blow them up. I can't store them.
So you didn't have to pay for it?
No. And then from Wrexham, it wasn't all that long, I was then posted to...
Did you do any bomb disposal itself in the Wrexham area?
No, it may have been done by that time. Because it had been Liverpool, people had done it and all. It wasn't much done. But the company, my section moved, went down to Lane End, High Wycombe. And we did the bombs there, in various places there.
What number was your section?
Oh, lovely, you got me.
Doesn't matter.
This was 7. That was 8 company. I think that was. It's so hard to remember these days. One was 7 platoon, and one was 8. One was 7 company and 8 company. That's right. 7 company when I moved down to High Wycombe. Then I got posted as a captain, the second in command, to the 7 BD company at Bath. At Brislington, at Bristol. And
is that where you did most of your bomb disposal work?
Well, as a captain, I was doing mainly administrating the company. I was a bit senior in those days, and so I think being nearly a regular. So, I did quite a bit of it, actually. We had the colonel turned up at Sevenoaks one day. That's a bit later on. While we're in Lane End, one of our subalterns awarded the George Cross, a lad called Lieutenant Archer. And he's a very brave chap. And he got his medal by what he'd done when he was in the company at Bristol. He'd been done several things. One thing was he wanted to take a fuse out of a bomb which had gone off in a crater. And but the only way he could get across it was to he couldn't get on it. But he managed to get a hen coop, which he'd put across the top of the hole then, and tied and then got out a rope to the fuse. And pulled it out, and it came out quite happily, no trouble. It wasn't until he sent it to the lead, our research people, that they said this thing was a new fuse, and it should have gone off. Well, he'd been sitting on the hen coop pulling it out. So that did happen quite a lot, actually, in the war, and the Germans were. And always very keen to make certain that their own people didn't get injured by putting in the wrong fuses in or misknowing that they played safe.
But he did that in Bristol, did he?
Mm-hmm. He did that just on outside Bristol. Mm-hmm. Then at Archer.
You were telling me earlier that you had a bomb to handle at Bathampton near Bath.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes, when he was aiming, Germans were aiming at Bristol, missed Bath, and hit this Bathampton.